Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null, broadcasting and video streaming live from our studios in New York City. And I welcome you. Today, we're going to explore, in our health and nutrition segment, how drinking tea can reduce non-cardiovascular death by 24%, how energy drinks can cause heart problems, a major look at what happens when we have lactobacillus, the good probiotics, 8 reasons that you should be using apple cider vinegar. It's one of the most powerful health tonics you can bring into your kitchen, and a lot more on health and healing. Then, from our public health segment, what if I told you that virtually all of those selective serotonin reuptake inhibiting drugs for depression didn't work? Did not work. From the University of Texas, from our public health segment, serotonin deficiency can cause depression. It's just a myth. We've been saying this for a long time. Then my guests in the second part of our program, Professor of Molecular Medicine at the College of Veterinary Medicine and graduate field of biophysics at Cornell University, and a scholar from Oxford and Harvard, Dr. Robert Oswald, joined by Michelle Bamberger from Cornell, talking about health risks and hazards from America's shale gas boom, the gas hydrofracking boom. And I'll be adding in about what's wrong with that whole boom. Then also from our public health segment, the most vile medical experiments conducted on humans in America and why we should pay attention to this. If time permits, I want to offer in a commentary from Chris Hedges on the last gasp of climate change liberals from Truthdig. Why is that important? Because I believe that this march coming up will make no fundamental difference. I certainly appreciate the average citizen wanting to do something. That's noble. But I believe that the corporate liberals and many of the think tanks and the environmental foundations have, for all intents and purposes, they've sold out the environmental movement. I'll share my thoughts as well on what we should be doing. We have a lot to talk about. Let's begin. And if you want to watch today's program, you can go to Ustream, then search for Gary Null. Organic tea, preferably decaffeinated tea, is very important for us. Being able to drink an organic tea is very soothing and it's relaxing. Even if it's a cold tea, an iced tea, still great. I like to have a hibiscus and lemongrass tea mixed together. Add in some manuka honey, some vitamin C, and some lemon juice, and then blend that with some ice. You've got one of the greatest thirst quenchers imaginable. But you also have something that's helping you. It's helping you live a longer life. In fact, it'll help prevent or reduce non-cardiovascular death by 24%. This is from a professor in France, Professor Danchin. Quote, if you have to choose between tea or coffee, it's best to drink tea. And the effects on cardiovascular health have been investigated in the past with, and we investigated the effects of tea on cardiovascular death and non-cardiovascular death in a large French population at low risk of cardiovascular disease. It was 131,401 people in the study, and it was in the Paris IPC Preventative Medicine Center over a 7-year period. And then they did a follow-up of 3.5 years. And here's what they found. If you drink 1 to 4 cups a day, you had a 57% in those 4 cups less likelihood of dying. If you drank less tea, you still had strong risk of not dying. So what it's saying in lay language is that drink herbal teas, they can reduce your risk of death. And that's a good thing for everyone. Now, something that we're drinking a lot of in the United States, and we shouldn't be, are energy drinks, at least the commercial energy drinks. Now, if I want an energy drink, I can make some blueberries. In fact, almost every day I take a pint of blueberries, black raspberries, and a pint of red raspberries. Or if I miss one of those, I'll have strawberries. I wash them thoroughly, and then I agitate them, meaning after I wash them, I then put them in a bowl, and I run water over them, and then I shake the berries, and that agitates off any debris that may have a pathogenic bacteria on it, or parasite. And then you rinse it. You do it 3 times. It's clean. It's ready to consume. Now I throw that into a blender. I'll put in then some apple juice, fresh made apple juice, and a little bit of lemon. Add in some ice and blend it up as a smoothie. It's a great way to have energy because it's going to give you a lot of energy, but it also gives you polyphenols and phytonutrients and antioxidants that help repair damages to your DNA, helps you live a longer life, helps repair the epithelial tissue in your arteries and veins, helps deocclude your carotid arteries, helps your brain, and it's got good fibers, so it helps digestion. There's no real sugar to speak of, a little bit of natural fructose from the natural sugars in there, but a diabetic could have it. There's no processed sugars, no concentrated sugars at all. So it has low glycemic index. So on all levels, it's just a terrific, tasty, nutritious, delicious drink. That's what we should be drinking. Now, if you want to really have super energy, then just take a coenzyme Q10, like 200 milligrams, NADH, 25 milligrams, PPQ, 10 milligrams, and vitamin E, 400 units, with that drink. Oh, and then you have a lot of energy for your brain, for your heart, and for your musculature. This is the latest in the European Society of Cardiology, a major study on the impact of consuming these very popular, you see them almost at every checkout counter there is, on energy drinks. Here's what it says, I'll quote verbatim. Energy drinks can cause heart problems. This is according to the 2014 Congress of the European Society of Cardiology. A professor, Drisi, said, quote, so-called energy drinks are popular in clubs and physical exercise programs, when people sometimes consuming a number of drinks one after the other. This situation can lead to a number of adverse conditions, including angina, cardiac arrhythmias, irregular heartbeat, and even sudden death. Around 96% of these drinks contain caffeine, and with the equivalent of 2 espressos of caffeine. Caffeine is one of the most potent antagonist of the receptors and leads to a massive release of calcium within cardiac cells. This can cause arrhythmias, but also affects one's heart abilities to contract and use oxygen. In addition, 52% of the drinks contain taurine and other nutrients, but it's the caffeine that's the problem. So, better be careful about drinking any of those energy drinks. I wouldn't recommend you drink any, quite frankly. Now, everyone in this audience knows that consuming probiotics is very important for you. It gives you the good bacteria, and that good bacteria means good health, not just in the intestine or colon, but in your body, because they migrate to your rest of your tissues. This is the latest study from the National Taiwan University. And here's what it says. It says, the bacteria Lactobacillus may protect against dental caries by reducing oral levels of Staphylococcus mutans, the main bacteria associated with tooth decay. Scientists at the National Taiwan University report that this particular probiotic was effective in preventing the formation of dental caries in lab animals. So, we didn't know that taking probiotics could help reduce tooth decay, but it does, and that's a good thing. When I was growing up, we didn't have olive oil in my home. Everything was seasoned with apple cider vinegar. And our apple cider vinegar was made by my great aunt. She was the only one in my whole family, and we had a very large family, that grew things, had a love for animals. She was a vegetarian, a vegan, and also being able to work with herbs. And she'd bring us over these big jugs, like a gallon jug. And in it, I would look and see all this kind of little cloudy stuff. Well, that was the unfiltered apple cider vinegar, and that's what we had on salads. Later, when I came to New York City, the hottest natural treatment was apple cider vinegar and honey. And if you mixed a tablespoon of the apple cider vinegar with a teaspoon of a raw organic honey, and you sip that, that would kill a lot of bacteria and viruses in your throat, and also help alkalize your blood, and it did a lot. And people used it. There was even a book on it called Folk Medicine. Now we know that that old folk medicine was real. It worked. Here are some of the things that unprocessed, meaning unpasteurized organic apple cider vinegar, which is called the mother vinegar, can do. And don't be put off if you see those kind of like cobwebby strings in it. That's completely natural. It can help you if you have sunburn, if you cut yourself, if you have insect bites, if you have stomach ache and sinus infections. It's great if you have a problem with your hair, if you have a bad scalp, if you have any form of scalp condition after you shampoo and rinse. Then massage in apple cider vinegar and leave it on for an hour, and then rinse it off. If you want something for candida, it can kill it, to rebalance from acid to alkaline. If you're diabetic, it's good, and if you have warts to pour it on, it's good. It's good to lower blood pressure, and it kills fungus. It's good for your throats, and it helps turn off migraine headaches. It's good for dissolving kidney stones. So all that, and particularly good for blood sugar, and there's a lot of research on that, and also for allergies. And if you have elevated cholesterol, there was a good article in General Medicine that I saw in Medscape that apple cider vinegar can lower cholesterol and lowers blood pressure. Think how many Americans have elevated high blood pressure. It can do that. And it's really good if you've been consuming, let's say you went off the wagon, you start eating sugar or pastries or hamburgers, hot dogs, pizzas, and you become highly acidic. Apple cider vinegar can restore your blood chemistry to an alkaline state. And with a normal pH levels between 7.35 and 7.45, it can help do that. So, all that from just something that's been around a long time, inexpensive, and makes a salad taste nicer. A study shows that curcuminoids and piperine combo used together reduces osteoarthritis symptoms. This is from a University of Medical Science in Iran, and it says curcuminoids represent an effective and safe alternative treatment for osteoarthritis. That was the conclusion of the study. That's good. We need that. So one more reason to use curcumin and also black pepper. Good for a German supermarket giant. They're demanding a return to GMO-free fed poultry. Now, it would be good if they had no poultry, but, quote, this is from a global GMO-free coalition. Germany's top supermarkets, the powerhouses of Europe, when it comes to retail, have delivered a blow to the biotech industry by forcing the German poultry industry to return to the use of non-GMO feed. It announced that just a few days ago. So we're not doing that in the United States, but they're doing it over there. And finally, pistachios helps those with type 2 diabetes recover from stress better. And that's not eating a lot, just a couple of ounces of pistachios, preferably raw organic pistachios. And that will help you. This was research at Penn State University. That's the latest on health and healing now from a few things from our public health. I'm in the process of doing a documentary that I've been working on for about 4 years. I will finish it in the next 12 months. It's called Manufacturing Madness. It's all about the treatment of people for mental conditions or emotional conditions that they call mental conditions. Labeling people from the Diagnostic Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, number 5. And almost any behavior whatsoever can be labeled as psychiatric, hence abnormal and hence drugged. And their big profit center comes from what are called SSRIs, selective serotonin reuptake inhibitors. That would be Prozac, Paxil, Zoloft, Effexor. I have said for a long time that these do not work. There's no science showing that they work because there's no science showing that these conditions are due to a brain chemical imbalance. There's no measurement, there's no test, there's no blood chemical test, there's nothing. It's all myth. This is from Texas, University of Texas, from yesterday. Quote, an article. A new study in mice suggests that serotonin deficiency may not play an influential role in depression as has been previously thought. Since the late 1980s, a popular theory has claimed that increasing levels of the serotonin molecule, serotonin, is central to treating depression. This approach to treating depression is typified by the antidepressant Prozac, which works by boosting serotonin levels. When Prozac was launched in the 1980s, it became a popular treatment for depression very quickly. However, some experts credit Prozac's popularity not to it being more effective than previous antidepressant medications, such as tricyclics, which work by blocking absorption of serotonin and norepinephrine in the brain, but because it had fewer side effects than other antidepressants. Because of the widespread use of Prozac, the theory that low levels of serotonin cause depression also rose in popularity. But was there a sound evidence to support this theory? Many experts think not. And as antidepressant researcher Alan Frazier, chair of the Pharmacological Department, University of Texas Health Center Science, told NPR, quote, I don't think there's any convincing body of data that anybody has ever found that depression is associated with a significant extent with a loss of serotonin, end quote. Now, in that same piece, Dr. Joseph Coyle, a professor of neuroscience at Harvard's Medical School in Boston, is quoted as saying, quote, chemical imbalance is sort of last century thinking. It's much more complicated than that. It's really an outmoded way of thinking. Now, let's just look at some fast facts about serotonin and depression. Tricyclics were the first antidepressants trialed in the late 1950s, initiated the theory, not fact, that chemical imbalances cause depression. In the 1990s, Pedro Delgado, chair of the University of Texas Psychiatric Department, conducted a study that found depleting human subjects of serotonin did not cause them to become depressed. Also, depression is said to be the world's leading cause of disability. 350 million people in the world are depressed each day. Now studies show that 60 to 70% of depressed patients do not respond to Prozac or any similar drugs. Therefore, the researchers behind the new study from the John Dingell VA Medical Center and Wayne State University School of Medicine wanted to see what role, if any, serotonin plays in depression. The researchers found that the mice showed heightened compulsivity and aggression, but did not display symptoms of depression. So the researchers conclude that serotonin may not be a dominant factor in depression. So what does this mean? It means that what if everything you have been told about treating depression was wrong? That is what this shows. That Celexa, Zoloft, Paxil, Prozac, Lexapro, I would not recommend them under any conditions to anyone. The study was published in the peer-reviewed journal ACS Chemical Neuroscience. And Dr. Donald Kahn was the study's chief author. And so this should really go a long way to showing that with all the propaganda and with all the financial interests of the pharmaceutical industry, at the end of the day, there was no legitimate science. So, needless to say, this is going into the film. And we have been arguing this for a long time. We were right. The entire medical community, all of psychiatry, was wrong. And not that it makes a difference. Generally, it doesn't. But at least this audience needs to know that. And from our environmental segment today, Pennsylvania makes public 243 cases of fracking contaminated water. From the Daily Cause, the state of Pennsylvania has released redacted details of 243 cases of water contamination caused by fracking and related activities by the natural gas industry. Claims made by the fracking industry that they have not contaminated water are utter rubbish. These 243 cases, which took place in Pennsylvania between 2008 and 14, involve a wide range of contamination problems, including the contamination of multiple water supply wells by one fracking operation. State officials did not indicate how many more cases of contamination may have occurred that were not included on the list. So, now they said there is not one. Well, just in Pennsylvania, we have 243 and counting. They lied, we've caught them, and that's that. Not long ago, I was one of the individuals who showed up for a major demonstration, about 5,000 to 6,000 people, I'm guesstimating, at Union Square. I was the a final keynote speaker of the day, and a lot of the people there, probably 60%, were from my radio audience, and I appreciate them coming down there. And it was a march against Monsanto. The effort was to bring together the best information we could on why genetically modified foods are dangerous, shouldn't be used, and in study after study with animals, they've proven extremely problematic. We handed out copies of Seeds of Death and suggested to the rest of the audience watch Seeds of Death and share it. That's the very least someone could do, is watch it and share it to as many sources as they can. And it's the most watched and shared documentary that we're aware of in decades. I think our last search results yesterday showed 45 million search results for Seeds of Death. So the information in it is getting out there. Vandana Shiva, Jeffrey Smith, Dr. Chopra from Canada, all the people who are really at the forefront are in the film. Dr. Saralini is in there as well. In any case, someone came over to me and said that they were part of an environmental group And they were at the UN when I gave a keynote speech 2 years before that, where I really excoriated, in the first half of my talk, the entire environmental movement. And the person said, when you started to make your statements, it made me and everyone else uncomfortable because the whole room was filled with environmental organizations and people. But then you said something that I haven't been able to shake. Look at the money that's going to these major environmental organizations, then look at what they won't go against. And the person said, you don't see any of the major environmental organizations at any of the March Against Monsanto efforts, the anti-nuclear efforts, the anti-gas fracking efforts, the vaccine efforts. You don't see any of them. And if these are all completely legitimate and the evidence is overwhelming, why? Because I gave examples of one environmental organization receiving $26 million, another one $20 million from polluters. And hence, they don't touch what they got the money from. They won't go to that industry and say, ah, let's go march, let's get our membership to march. And I said at that in the UN that we should start over. The entire environmental movement in America should be scrapped and start from scratch. Because we've had wrong leadership and we've had well-intentioned people who are simply extremely naive. They do not understand the world we live in, the reality of the politics. I won't mention any names, but I don't believe that this march coming up is going to do anything. Hence, I'm not participating in it, because I believe that we need to be far more specific. If you have a march where a group of scientists are meeting and people are meeting at the UN, then your march should be at the UN and not down Broadway. When you don't have any featured speakers, then what is your point? That shows how co-opted the movement is. And then I see some of the sponsors. Well, some of the sponsors of the march are the very polluters that we should be challenging. So once again, the environmental movement has been co-opted. So we have to start over and do it ourselves. I don't trust any of those people, nor do I trust organizations. The climate change march in New York, expected to draw as many as 200,000 people, is one of the last gasps of conventional liberalism's response to the climate crisis. Now, according to Chris Hedges, it'll take place 2 days before the actual gathering of the world leaders, New York, called by UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to discuss the November 2015 UN Climate Conference in Paris. Now, the marchers will dutifully follow the route laid out down by the New York City police. They will leave Columbus Circle on West 59th Street and 8th Avenue at 11:30, and on Sunday, and conclude at 11th Avenue between 34th and 38th Streets. No one will reach the United Nations, which is located on the other side of Manhattan, on the East River, beyond 1st Avenue, at least legally. There'll be no speeches. There's no list of demands. It will be a climate-themed street fair. Now, the march, because its demands are amorphous, can be joined by anyone. And this is intentional. But as activists have pointed out, this also means some of the groups backing the march are little more than corporate fronts. The climate group, for example, which endorses the march, includes among its member sponsors British Petroleum, China Mobile, Dow Chemical, Duke Energy, HSBC, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan Chase, and Greenstone. The Environmental Defense Fund, which says it works with companies rather than against them, and which is calling on its members to join the march, has funding from the oil and gas industry and supports fracking as a form of alternative energy. So these faux environmental organizations, in my personal opinion, completely co-opted, are designed to neutralize resistance, and their presence exposes the march's failure to adopt a meaningful agenda or pose a genuine threat to power. Our only hope comes from radical groups descending on New York to carry out direct action, including global climate convergence and popular resistance. March if you want, but it should be the warm-up. The real fight will come once people disperse on 11th Avenue. According to Kevin Zeese, who has a program here, The march is symbolic. A popular resistant reached him by phone. Quote, he said, "But we are past the time of symbolism. What we need is direct action against the United Nations during the meeting. This should include blockades and disruption of the meeting itself. We need to highlight the fact that the United Nations has sold out to corporate interest. At UN meetings on climate change, you see corporate logos on display. And during the last meeting on climate change in Poland, the UN held a simultaneous conference to promote coal as a clean energy source. So these UN meetings have become corporate trade shows where discussions on climate are hijacked to promote corporate interest. And Barack Obama has announced he will continue the U.S. stance of only calling for voluntary climate goals in advance of the upcoming climate summit in Paris next year." So what does this mean? This means there'll be no change whatsoever to anything whatsoever in our climate whatsoever. The trouble is the climate is changing. We've all seen it. And you'll see a lot more of it, and it's going to get a lot worse. None of these meetings matter. They're all just dog and pony shows. All of them. Every single one. Nothing happens. America refuses, our president refuses, our Congress refuses to do anything that would actually stop pollution. But then again, there's utter hypocrisy. If you have 200,000 people marching in New York City against global warming, for example, ask them, how many of you have given up meat that represents 18% of the pollution of methane gas, or more methane comes from eating animals than comes from all cars, all trucks, all railroad planes and ships? I'll bet 95% of the people at that march will be eating meat. So it's hypocritical. And how many of you are giving up plastic for paper? And how many of you are living a sustainable life? And how many of you are working with real environmental grassroots efforts? How many of you have been to demonstrations to stop gas hydrofracking and to close down Indian Point nuclear facilities? How many of you buy your food from farmers markets organically grown and locally produced? How many of you shop at the big monolithic Whole Foods, where Mr. Mackey, the founder, is a Ayn Rand libertarian, and his company is just a disgrace, in my opinion, for all the things they've done, selling non-organic produce as organic, and even buying up all the Wild Oats stores? What was he bought? 500 stores and close them all down? Did anyone think about what that does to every small ethical health food store in the country and food co-op in the country? Mr. Mackey's Whole Foods empire has caused more destruction to the organic farming movement and to small health food stores than any single other source in American history. So when you shop there, you're supporting that. How many of the people who are going to be in that march still bank at one of the major banks and still shop in the big box stores where that product is coming from China that exploits its laborers and is using coal burning and contributing more pollution than we do in the United States? So it's time that we stop living as hypocrites. I realize that's saying a lot, but it's time. The fossil fuel industry and corporations from ExxonMobil to Koch Industries underwrite political campaigns and author our legislation. They have stacked the courts with their judges and the airways with their apologists. They fund our scientific research and have effectively silenced dissidents. Now, this corporate reach extends to the United Nations. Companies set up exhibition halls at UN climate summits promoting various corporate schemes to profit from the climate crisis, from clean coal and biofuels to nuclear power and carbon trading. And those who attempt to offer a counter-narrative, especially after the disruptions at the climate summit in Copenhagen in 2009, are swiftly silenced by UN security. Fences and security barriers now ring heavily guarded UN climate conferences. Protesters are herded into police-controlled free speech zones outside, like the march in New York, and ruthlessly dealt with if they deviate from the approved routes or make their voices heard among the delegates. UN security at climate summits, which includes physical removing journalists so they cannot photograph or document protests that are shut down by force, is so absolute that the UN demands pre-approval wording for T-shirts worn at its gatherings. The elites, whether in Congress or attending the UN summits, have no intention of cutting off their access to wealth, power, and privilege. They know where the money is. They know what they have to do to get it. And we are not part of their equation. Our democracy is an elaborate public relations charade. And the longer we accept this charade, the longer we will be irrelevant. Only when we understand power can we fight it. This fight must be waged on two fronts. We must disrupt the machinery of corporate capitalism, at the same time build parallel autonomous structures for self-governance. This is not a battle I would have picked. I prefer that there be cooperation. I prefer a system in which we can elect politicians to represent the governed and thwart corporate abuse. I prefer a United Nations that serves the interests of the people around the globe rather than corporate profit. I prefer a vigorous and free debate in the public arena. I prefer a judiciary that has not wholly owned our entire judicial system. From prosecutors to federal judges, they are all corrupt. They are all controlled. They are all ideologues. They are all self-interested. At one or another level, they could never be trusted for objectivity and fairness in anything representing a spiritual decision. I prefer the freedom to express dissent without government monitoring of my communications and control of my movements. I prefer to have my basic civil liberties protected. But that is completely impossible in the United States. The corporate state's response to climate change has been to pass a series of draconian laws and to set up a vast security and surveillance apparatus to obliterate our privacy, allows us to be snatched off the streets by the military and held without due process and indefinite detention, and criminalizes dissent. The corporate state holds in its hands the legal and physical tools to shut us down. Its response to climate change is not to alter course, but to silence anyone who resists. And that's how it is. And that's why I will not be joining that march nor supporting it on any level. I'm Gary Noll. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. Welcome all of you. In a few moments, we're going to be hearing from Professor Robert Oswald and Dr. Michelle Bamberger on the health risks and hazards from America's shale gas boom. But just a moment I'll take. We've got a wonderful special here for you today. It's three things at an incredible savings of $60. First up, the Supremacy Extra, the pineapple juice, and it's our offering today. It's called the Supremacy Extra Pineapple, 450 grams. That's a big, huge serving. That should last you about 6 months to 9 months. And in that, you're getting the ascorbyl palmitate, which is a fat-soluble vitamin C, lasts longer in the body, calcium ascorbate, magnesium ascorbate, potassium ascorbate. These are the finest forms of the vitamin mineral to get them into your system, plus the vitamin C, 2,100 milligrams per serving. And then you're also getting acerola extract and also the amla. You're getting all that in here in each serving. So that's vitamin C. So it's terrific. Then, if you can find a better vitamin C in the world, buy it. But I don't know of any, and I created this one. And it's still, to this day, after all these decades, it's still the most popular one. Now, going with that big bottle of vitamin C that you should be using every day is my brand new PBS public television station's program. Just started airing. Not here in New York, so I'm going to offer to our audience. It's a brand new book, a big book, No More Allergies, a complete guide to preventing and treating and overcoming allergies naturally. You name it, it's in here. Everything. There are tens of millions of Americans suffer from allergies, don't even know it. From gluten and dairy and dogs and cats and dust and molds and danders and even things they didn't think they'd be allergic to. And this can cause fatigue. It can cause brain problems. So what do you do about it? I show you step by step how to overcome allergies. Build your immune system so that you're not harmed by it. I also have a documentary that goes with it, a DVD documentary, with all the best experts on natural approaches to allergies in America. So it's a book, brand new, you haven't heard me talk about it, and a documentary, and that comes with the vitamin C. So how about that for a special? So this is a great brand new book and DVD. I believe the book is a hardback book. So you're saving $60. Call 877-627-5065. 877-627-5065 for No More Allergies, the book, brand new book, big book, hardback, and No More Allergies, the documentary. Brand new documentary. You haven't seen it, but it's playing on some public television stations around the country as we speak. It's just been released. So you're getting that and the big vitamin C, pineapple, with amla, acerola, and all the wonderful ascorbated minerals that help your body. Call 877-627-5065, 877-627-5065, and on the package, you're going to save $60, and the cost to you is only $89.99. Back in a moment with my guest. Please stay with us. To welcome you from all over the world, I'm Gary Nall, broadcasting and video streaming from our studios in New York City. We now have from Ithaca, New York, Professor Robert Oswald on. He is Professor of Molecular Medicine at the College of Veterinary Medicine in a graduate field of biophysics at Cornell University, where his focus on research has been the function of neurotransmitter receptors, in particular glutamate receptors, as they relate to learning, memory, and a variety of neurological disorders. He has served on the editorial board of the Journal of Biological Chemistry and at the scientific journal Molecular Pharmacology. He has also been a visiting professor at Oxford and Harvard universities. And he is also the co-author with Dr. Michelle Bamberger, a veterinarian practicing in Ithaca, New York. And Dr. Bamberger is a graduate of Cornell College of Veterinary Medicine and also has a master's in pharmacology from Hahnemann University Medical College. She studied at Oxford in the United Kingdom, and they are the co-authors of the recent book, The Real Cost of Fracking, How America's Shale Gas Boom is Threatening Our Families, Pets, and Food. And they are also both members of the advisory board of the organization Physicians, Scientists, and Engineers for Healthy Energy. Nice to have you with us today.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you.
Many of our listeners have likely seen the documentary film Gasland by Josh Fox and have heard the terrible stories of illness and autoimmune diseases among populations concentrated around large-scale natural gas fracking. But we rarely hear about the impact of fracking's toxic chemicals released into the environment and our water supplies or to animals. And most people tend to disassociate themselves from the images and data of toxic chemical risks of animals. They forget that humans, too, share much of the same biochemistry and biological function. And we witness this in particular in animal research and evidence found among animals consuming genetically modified feed. So there's a large body of evidence showing GMO consumption has really life-impacting concerns for livestock. However, we tend to think that that doesn't apply to humans, and therefore GMOs are safe. And there is a similar mindset that can apply to the evidence of fracking chemicals and the risks to animals and our pets. So I'd like for you to begin by sharing some of the most compelling evidence showing gas hydrofracking's risks to animals' health that should raise alarm and force state governments to reevaluate the bonanza of shale gas fracking that continues to be underway.
Oh, yeah, it's scary. I'm thinking of the first case that we had heard of that really caught our attention and actually many people's attention when it happened, and that was in Louisiana in April of 2009 when a herd of beef cattle were exposed to hydraulic fracturing fluid, and about half the herd died within an hour. I actually spoke to the veterinarian on that case, of the herd's veterinarian, who told me that the herd was in good health before that exposure. But I think for your viewers out there who may think, well, so what, you know, half the herd died. The thing to remember here is that a cow is about 1,000 pounds. And we're talking about an animal being exposed, of that size, being exposed to something and dying within an hour. And that is pretty dramatic, especially in light of what we hear from the industry, that hydraulic fracturing fluid is about 99% water and sand, and then the rest, that 1%, it's only 1%. Is chemicals, but a 1% solution can be very toxic, and it was in this case.
One drop from an eyedropper into an Olympic swimming pool of methylmercury is enough to create a toxic reaction in the entire pool. So if you said, what is the percentage of one drop of mercury into all the gallons of water in an Olympic swimming pool, you say, well, it's into the parts per million. So your statement is well taken, that you don't have to have more than 1% or 2% of an item, depending upon what the ingredients are. But there's the problem. They have not given the consumers a list of all the ingredients used in hydrofracking so we can examine it.
Right, that's right. And I think, Gary, the problem comes in when you start looking at the chemicals that they do sometimes list, and they do have a website, industry does have a website called Frack Focus, and they do put up some of the chemicals. It is done on a volunteer basis, and it's always done after completion, and what that means is it's done after the fracking is over. So there's no way that people out there could say, hey, you know, let me test before drilling starts, because that's really the only way legally you could tell if something shows up after, was it in your water before? But the problem comes in when you look at those list of chemicals, that there are things called blend. They blend a lot of chemicals into mixes. And so if you look at those, you may have 1%, 30% or whatever chemicals in that blend that you know that are listed, but then the other, you know, 99% to 70%, somewhere around in that range, you don't know. And those are chemicals that are secrets, the secret proprietary secret chemicals within the industry. They will not share them. They're afraid that other companies may get a hold of what their blend is that they use for whatever part of the fracking procedure or drilling procedure. And so that's where the problem really comes in. You did hit the nail on the head there. Obviously, for those cows, there was something really, really toxic in that fluid that killed them within an hour.
Professor Oswald, regarding human health in regions that are heavily being fracked, like Wyoming, Pennsylvania, much of Texas, Oklahoma, what are we discovering that is similar to conditions found in animals?
Well, I think one of the big areas where we see similar things is in the area of reproduction. In cows in particular, we see serious problems with difficulty breeding, difficulty of the calves to thrive, etc. When you look at some of the human databases in those areas, we see things like low birth weight, low Apgar scores, and various other things suggesting that there are problems with the newborns that show up more frequently in areas that have been drilled than those areas that have not been drilled.
What do we know about the hundreds of different chemicals? Which ones are you most concerned about that you've seen? And we know many of these chemicals, not all of them, as you just mentioned. There are also certain chemicals being used in fracking fluids that we now know are posing a greater health risk to residents and communities where fracking is occurring, because we have so many reports of people who are sick now and their animals sick, where before they were not sick.
Yeah, I think one of the things you have to realize here is that, we do many times focus on the chemicals in the hydraulic fracturing fluid, but that's not the only things we have to worry about. What happens in this process is a lot of, millions of gallons of fluid is injected into the ground, but there is also, a lot of heavy metals, the radioactivity, organic compounds, even microbes that come back to the surface with that fluid. So we have to be concerned with that as well as what's being injected into the ground in terms of the hydraulic fracturing fluid. The other thing, we tend to overlook, and it may be even a more significant problem, is the air pollution that's associated with a number of different processes. And again, here I'd like to expand it beyond just the drilling. I mean, drilling and hydraulic fracturing is only a small part of the total operation. This, what we're talking about, is really a huge industrialization of the landscape, which includes pipelines running everywhere in shale gas areas, as well as running away from the shale gas areas to other parts of the country, eventually to export to the world. And there are compressor stations that give out pollution 24/7, processing plants that emit even more pollution into the air. So there's so many different factors, and there we're very far away from understanding all of the impacts on human and animal health.
Not just that, but according to all the research I have, including today, the World Resources Institute says that 8 of the top 20 countries with the largest shale gas resources face arid conditions or high to extreme baseline water stress where the resources are located, which means that the gas hydrofracking is causing water wars, or will use existing water that is already low. So we have using up water, over 1 to 3 million gallons per year per well. You have heavy metals, as you mentioned, into the soil, into the air. You have pollution of the water, which can also leak. It can contribute to pollution, just as like the coal industry was causing pollution in the water in Appalachia, where I come from. So too does gas hydrofracking. In fact, Pennsylvania just released this week that there were hundreds of wells that were polluted, and yet the industry said, the water was polluted, and the industry said no, but they've actually released this. A lot of the material was redacted, but at least now we have it on record. So when you look at the total sum of this, and then you look at Dick Cheney working back in 2002 to try to get the law written that would protect the gas and oil industry from oversight under the Clean Air and Clean Water Act, and then you start realizing that how the gas industry has worked the system at the state level by lobbying. Then you look at Pennsylvania. Right now, if you're a medical doctor in Pennsylvania and if your patient is showing symptoms of contamination, environmental pollution, you cannot make that public. That's against the law in Pennsylvania. So these draconian laws follow this. Your thoughts on this, please.
Well, there are a lot of things that you covered there in that comment. Let me say a few things. I mean, one of the places where we're Where the water shortages are very apparent right now is California, which is in the middle of a huge drought, and they're ramping up to do a lot of hydraulic fracturing there. Now, what industry says often is that let's look at golf courses. Golf courses use as much water as a well that's been hydraulically fractured. However, one thing that's not noted is that that water stays part of the hydrologic cycle. It becomes part of rainfall eventually. It seeps into the ground. It becomes part of the water that we use. I mean, all the water we use on the planet, it gets reused. In this case, we have something that's a bit different because a lot of the water that's being used actually ends up staying in the ground. That's one possibility. And the other possibility, even when it comes back up out of the ground after hydraulic fracturing, there are lots of wastewater, and then that gets injected in many cases back into the ground. So a lot of that water is actually taken out of the hydrologic cycle, which is very different from what one sees in the golf course example.
Gary, I would like to make a comment on the DEP release of those cases. There were 243 cases that they released that they said that had documented water contamination associated with gas drilling. So what I did was I looked through all of my cases that we have in Pennsylvania, and there was only one of our cases out of 22 cases was actually on that list. And so what that tells me is that that this is the tip of the iceberg, that those 21 other cases have documented problems with their water quality or quantity associated with this high-volume hydraulic fracturing. And these people have also complained to the DEP. The DEP knows about this. Why weren't they on that list? So again, the viewers should know that 243 isn't just 243. It's at least 10 times more than that, if not more, in my mind, because this is just the few cases that we have. So there are problems with these regulatory agencies in the states not doing their job, not following up, not reporting violations, and not really helping the people out who are having problems.
My final thought on this is that here in New York State, Governor Cuomo continues to sit on the fence regarding approval of gas hydrofracking. And to me, he's not sitting on the fence. He represents the best interests of corporate Democrats. And I underline corporate as in Obama and Clinton corporate Democrats. And they're virtually the same in many of their appeals and their funding and their ideology as the corporate Republicans. And they're not really looking after the safety of the people of New York, or he would have closed down Indian Point, and he would have also said no to gas hydrofracking. And so I'm very concerned that right after the election, we're going to see the movement towards opening up the western part of the state in Columbia County, some of the poorer parts of the state, to gas hydrofracking. Your final thought on that, please.
I think, of course, that remains to be seen. I share your reservation about his motivations. He has been very quiet about it, and I think it's troubling. I mean, one of the reasons he's given for not releasing a decision is because of a health study, but yet no one really knows what's involved in that health study. I mean, there's been nothing really released about that. Everybody that I know who has tried to talk to the officials at the Department of Health has not been able to. So I'm very skeptical. I share your skepticism, and I'm afraid we may see that after the election.
Well, let us continue to be diligent. I appreciate the work you've done, especially with the new book, The Real Cost of Fracking, How America's Shale Gas Boom is Threatening Our Families, Pets, and Food. Thank you both for doing the work you've done. It's very needed, and it gives us a good education to help become more active on this important issue.
Thank you, Gary.
Thank you very much.
Professor Robert Oswald and Dr. Michelle Bamberger. I'm Gary Nall. We're out of time. Thank you all for listening. Very quickly, let's say hello to Luann Panessi. Hi, Luann.
Hello, Gary. Well, in keeping with what you've been just talking about today, I have an email here from Linda, and she says that she listens to you overnight since she works nights, And she says, I listen to all the archive shows. She says, when do you believe that there's going to be a movement to get the independents and progressives among them to support populist candidates?
My hope is that it becomes one now. The reason that we have brought in Eutrice Lead, who's going to follow us right now, and she's online, the reason that we have over 85 of the most progressive voices in America is because we believe that there should be platforms and forums for them to express ideals and ideas and talking points that can move us forward and unite us. We're trying to get Jill Stein and Rocky Anderson and Ralph Nader and Dennis Kucinich to all do a rotating show on platforms for progressives. And not that they're going to win elections, but rather they're going to be a voice in that election cycle so we can start promoting independent populist views. It's happening now. Thank you, Luann. Let's say hello to Eutrice Lead. Hi, Eutrice.
Hello, Gary. Hi, Luann. Hi to your guests as well. Today, as President Obama heads to the NATO summit in Wales, we're talking about President Obama and the wars of the world.
Great. Right now, Eutrice Lead.